This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. D4VD, a.k.a. David Allen Burke, whines he has money woes. Boo-hoo! This is a grand jury homicide indictment looms. Timing. A home incinerator found still in the box at D4VD's home. Was it purchased at the time of Celeste's death? I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us. David is finally being considered as a suspect in the death teen girl Celeste found decomposing in his vehicle.
Was she dismembered? Was she frozen? Was she decapitated?
What was going on in that household up to this homicide?
In the last hours, we learned that LAPD is focusing in on the time a home incinerator was purchased. Straight out to Professor of Forensics, Jacksonville State University, author of Blood Beneath My Feet on Amazon, and star of a hit podcast, Body Bags with Joe Scott Morgan. Joe Scott, thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Home incinerator? I mean, who has a home incinerator? Have you seen those things? They're huge. They're huge. Why do you need a home incinerator?
Yeah, the fact that there is a burn cage that's even being alluded to here, Nancy, is quite fascinating. And here's why. A burn cage can burn up to 1,600 degrees Fahrenheit. Nancy, that's in the same neighborhood as an actual crematory, all right? With a crematory, which works on natural gas, it has to be sustained for about 2 to 3 hours. It can render down an entire human remain, all right? If that's the goal here with this thing, there are actually cases out there where burn cages have, in fact, been used to render down human remains. I'm not saying that that's what's involved here, but the fact that there is one in such close proximity to where she was found is certainly, from an investigative standpoint, very compelling.
Joining us now, the man who actually first sees the home incinerator in the mansion of David Burke. D4VD. Joining me right now is a now renowned private investigator, Steve Fisher. Steve, I know that you were hired by the owner of the D4VD mansion to find out what the hay was going on inside the mansion after Celeste's body is found. Where did you see a home incinerator?
The home incinerator was actually inside the house. It wasn't even in the garage. And it was still packaged, but it's a 55-pound, device, and which serves no purpose at that house. And so it immediately raised, huge alarm bells with us. Especially considering it found in the Tesla, and you got to wonder what the plans were ultimately to maybe get rid of her permanently.
I got a question for you, Steve Fisher. You state that the home incinerator was still packaged. Did you take photos of it?
Yes, absolutely.
Do you know what kind of incinerator it is, the name brand?
Yeah, it's made by a company called Dr. Burn. And, their whole advertisement is that it burns at 1,600 degrees. And, human cremations are done at 1,400 degrees. So, this is meant to, reduce things, including animal carcasses and whatnot. And this is something you would typically find on a farm.
Well, I've got a question for you. Why are you saying it's used for animal carcasses? I'm not saying that it's not, but did you see anything on the package to inform you of that?
So, as soon as we found it on the outside, it clearly says Dr. Burn, and we went right to their website, and they're advertising and other people's, using it on YouTube. It shows that's what it's for. Now, it's not just for animal carcasses. It can incinerate literally anything, but this is something that's not even legal in the Hollywood Hills because the fire ordinances and whatnot. And then, we also found it, with a chainsaw, and, so, there's just a lot of questions, and it just it's a horrible look, you know.
So let me understand, Steve Fisher hired by the owner of Burke's mansion where he was renting it. You find a home incinerator. What I find very critical, two things. If you go to the, as you're calling it, Dr. Byrne, it's DR, original Byrne cage. There are YouTube videos about burning animal carcasses. So if I looked up home incinerator to burn carcass, that would pop up. Curious. So right there, and I'll circle back to you, Brian Fitzgibbons, there needs to be a full-on digital search as to whether that query was ever typed into anybody's phone, laptop, iPad, you name it. But, okay, so I know that pops up. But what I find very critical, Steve, is the date of the purchase. For instance, let me just throw this at you. You remember Brian Koberger, of course, who goes on Amazon and buys a dagger, a K-bar knife that was used to murder four innocent University of Idaho students, and his Amazon search was uncovered, and the purchase, and where he looked to buy a replacement after the murders. We know, for instance, cult mom Lori Vallow goes onto Amazon and buys a wedding dress, a groom's outfit, and a ring before her new husband's wife is killed. You know, Amazon is a beautiful thing. So I'm curious, Steve Fisher, when the Byrne cage was purchased. We've heard about the Byrne cage. What we haven't heard about is, what does it prove? Is it probative? It was still in the package. It wasn't used to destroy her body. But if I can draw a nexus between the time of her death and the time that Byrne cage was purchased, I got something. What about it, Fisher?
Yeah, so we don't have the exact date, but it just so happened that on January 19th, the owner had an inspection done of the house. It was very thorough with photographs. At that time, we know that the Byrne cage was not at the house on January 19th. And so sometime between the 19th and, you know, when the search warrant happened in September is when this arrived. And, you know, it's also around the time that the new Tesla arrived on February 1st. So there seemed to be a lot happening at the end of January, beginning of February. But as of January 19th, it was not there. But after, you know, as of September, it was there. So it appears it was ordered between those dates.
Okay. Joining me, as I said, an all-star panel. Joe Scott, you've got a question for Fisher.
Hey, oh, Steve.
Hey, hold on. Joe Scott, I got to warn you about one thing, Joe Scott.
Yeah.
Isn't it true, Steve Fisher, that you were called in front of the grand jury? Can you confirm that?
I can't say anything about a grand jury.
Okay. Well, if you had not been called, you would have said no. So I'm going to take that as a yes. You know, I've got a funny feeling that the prosecutor is going to be extremely irritated with you because you found evidence that the LAPD had not found yet. And I'm referring specifically to the Tesla with the dead body in the trunk of a little girl, Celeste Rivas. You found that and you scoured the neighborhood and got the Ring doorbell cam and the surveillance cam and could show that the car was being moved around the neighborhood so nobody would complain. It's parked out in front of their house. You even caught one of the driver's face. You still haven't revealed to me who that is. And LAPD or the DA's office didn't find any of that. So I guess she's a little ill with you right now. That said, I have a source telling me you were called in front of the grand jury, whether you confirm it or deny it. Okay, Joe Scott, the point being, he may not be able to answer some of our questions, but have at it.
I'll try to make it as general as possible. Hey, Steve, Joseph Scott Morgan, I got a question for you. I've been through this area before, only as a tourist. I could never afford, even know anyone there. High dollar area. If you rent a place up there, it would seem odd that it would be incumbent upon that person to do their own landscaping work. And I'm fascinated about this chainsaw and this idea that I'm sure the shrubs are lovely. Are you, you know, and you've got this, from what I'm understanding, an unopened chainsaw there. What would be the purpose of someone having this thing? And when did it show up?
Well, so you nailed it exactly. So because I've heard some people say that, well, you know, people have chainsaws that do yard work and trim trees. This was a rental that the owner was completely in charge of all the maintenance, including the pool, you know, the tree trimming, everything. That this was plug and play. They didn't have to do any of their own yard work. So there's no reason for it to be there. And it showed up again after January 19th. It was not there because there was photo documentation of that walkthrough and inspection, annual inspection. So it showed up after, you know, between, you know, the time of the search, January 19th, and the time of the search warrant. But you're absolutely right. They're not responsible for any of that maintenance, and can't think of any reason that they would need a chainsaw there.
Joining us now, Melissa McCarty, investigative journalist and author of The Making of a Crime Reporter. Melissa, thank you for being with us. You have a question for Fisher? Go ahead.
I do. Hey, Steve, two questions for you. One is, who were the two items addressed to? Was it the owner of the house or somebody else? And also, it's my understanding, the LAPD, they did not take those items as evidence, but do you know if there was any kind of brushing of fingerprints to see if David or somebody else in his inner circle at one point laid their hands on those boxes or collected those boxes, touched them to link the two?
Very good question. So they did not take the items. We contacted them and asked them specifically about it, and they told us that they photograph them, but they did not fingerprint them, and you know, there was no dust or anything on them, and they didn't appear to luminol them either, because they hadn't been removed from the packaging. So as far as who they were addressed to, they were addressed in a fake name, somebody that did not live at the residence, but they accepted the packages at the residence, and we believe, just from the investigation we've been able to do, that they used prepaid gift cards to purchase the items.
Whoa, wait. You're giving me all new information. Wait a minute. Are you telling me, have you told anybody else this? Are you telling me the home incinerator was addressed to a fake name, but somebody in that house accepted the package?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Correct.
How do you know that? Did you see the name?
Yes.
What was the name? How do you know it was fake?
Well, when I say fake name, it's somebody that does not live at the residence. It's the name of a female that does not live at the residence. Yeah, they accepted, they signed for the package through DHO.
Oh, I'm learning so much right now. Okay, so this guy did not go run down to Home Depot and buy a home incinerator. That means somebody went online, Steve Fisher, and ordered it. Would you agree?
Absolutely, and I'm sure those records are very subpoenable.
Okay, you know, Danny Rubin joining me right now, veteran criminal defense attorney, founder of the Rubin Law Firm. Danny, thank you for being with us tonight. I was getting a chest pain that was radiating up into my teeth when I was hearing Steve Fisher talking about, nope, they did not seize the home incinerator. They did not seize the chainsaw. They did not fingerprint them. They did not luminol them. I mean, that's bad, bad police work right there, that they just took pictures of them. Because, you know, juries, they want to look at it. They want to touch it, hold it, feel it, smell it, the whole shebang. But then I was heartened when I heard him say it was sent to a fake name, to somebody that doesn't live there, to this address, and it was accepted by someone in that home, which tells me there is a digital trail, Danny Rubin. It proves a lot.
I mean, what it can prove is the account that ordered it. It doesn't necessarily prove who ordered it. I mean, when I look at a case like this, I look at who's got the most to lose here. David had to know that if he is the one that would be culpable for this, he'd be the first one to be looked at. My question is, who's the second or who's the third? That's the person I'd want to investigate as his defense attorney.
You would want to investigate them to what? So just let's pretend for a moment that you're David Anthony Burke's lawyer. You want to look at everybody around him. So let's just be real here. So you can pull a SOD. Some other dude did it defense. So you're looking around at everybody else. Is that what you're saying? Just be straight.
Well, my question is, what if someone else actually did do it? I mean, his two managers are around him all the time. They're the ones that are economically invested. Robert Morgenroth was actually, as far as I've read, called to testify at the grand jury. And he was recorded saying, why didn't I call the police? Yes, the manager.
Okay. So, you know, they tried and it worked in the Top Mom Casey Anthony murder case when she got her mother, Cindy Anthony, to go on the stand under oath and fall on her sword and take the blame for the highly damning searches for how to make chloroform. She said that she wrote chlorophyll, not chloroform, and that the computer spell checked her because she wanted to get rid of bamboo in the backyard. It made no sense at all. That said, it worked in that case, so I can't poo-poo it that quickly. Brian Fitzgibbons is joining us now, Director Operations, USPA Nationwide Security. Brian, you also, in your search for people all around the world, are an expert at digital forensics. Brian, what should they be doing right now to determine who ordered the burn cage?
Yeah, I want to applaud Steve Fisher, Nancy, and the work that he's done, and identifying that the purchase was made with these gift cards, that it was delivered to a fictitious name or a name that wasn't at the residence. You know, this is going to provide investigators with a good foothold to begin that forensic search and subpoena these purchase records of what date this burn cage was purchased, on what IP address was the system accessed. They're going to be able to get quite a bit of information off of that purchase. And I think that you will see that provided that this moves forward to trial.
Yeah, you know what? You brought up another issue, Brian Fitzgibbons. Thank you. I was so taken by the fact that this was obviously ordered online. I wonder if they're going to be able to find where the purchaser watched that YouTube video Fisher just told us about, how the home fire cage can burn dead carcasses. Question to you, Steve Fisher, owner, founder of Steve Fisher SF Investigations. Steve, how do you know that it was bought with gift cards?
No, so I want to be clear. From what we've uncovered, it looks to us like it was purchased with gift cards from, you know, the communications that we've had. I can't say that 100% for certain, but it appears that that's how it was done. But, you know, we haven't
what
gotten
what kind of gift cards? Please say Amazon. What kind of gift cards? American Express, Visa, Home Depot?
Yeah, one of those you go to Target and buy like a prepaid Visa or Amex or whatever, you know, like that. Just something that doesn't have your name attached to it. Although you have to, I guess, technically register it, but you can use that in anybody's name. But I'll bet you that there is an email address that they formed this person's name, this fake name. So, and then that'll probably reside on one of those computers. And, you know, I think they'll be able to tie it all back to them. I don't think these are geniuses by any means.
You said that you can't say gift cards were used 100%, but that you have personally done, you and your team have done investigations that lead you to believe that gift cards were used. You're telling me the gift cards were not to a specific store such as Home Depot or Lowe's. You're telling me they were of the variety that you can go to Target and get, like, American Express or Visa gift cards. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, right. Yes.
Okay. Which leads me to believe that they were bought at Target. Were they bought at Target?
Oh, I honestly have no idea about that. I'm just saying that, you know, like, they're a seller of those. I don't know where they bought the gift cards at, but they were delivered, you know, through a, you know, delivery. So, like, you order online and it appears that they use DHL to ship this, you know, item.
To ship the gift cards or to ship the burn cage?
The burn cage. the burn cage. So I think it's going to be fairly easy.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Karen Stark joining me, forensic psychologist, renowned TV radio trauma expert, consultant at KarenStark.com. Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. Can't you just see? You know there's going to be video, right? They have cameras everywhere, specifically on the registers. Can't you just see this merry troop slinking into a store and getting all these gift cards, which is, they think, so sneaky because it's not in their name? I wonder if they paid in cash. Or did they charge it? Oh, I hope they charged it. Trying so hard to cover up, yet leaving a trail a mile wide for somebody like Steve Fisher to find.
It's very clear that these people were disorganized, Nancy. I mean, nobody really understood. How could you leave even the body in a car and keep moving the car around and not think that somebody would notice it, especially where they were? And if you consider the fact that she was dismembered, and then you also look at the fact that someone ordered a chainsaw, somebody ordered this burn incinerator, it's very telling that there was intent, or at least it seems that way, that they turned this body, it was dehumanized, and they were looking for any way, according to me, it seems, to get rid of the body without even thinking about this as a person.
Back to Steve Fisher, following up on what Karen Stark, psychologist, said. Steve Fisher, isn't it true that D4VD, a.k.a. David Allen Burke, was going on tour? So if Celeste was already dead, they wait and they wait and they wait, and the home incinerator doesn't show up. They're like, hell, you know, let's put her in the trunk. That's going to be the argument. Of course, they're all presumed innocent until proven guilty. So finally, you know what? Back up and punt. And she ends up in the trunk. Can't you just see that playing out, Fisher? Then the incinerator comes a day late, a dollar short. Should have used FedEx. But no, they used DHL. What about it, Fisher?
Yeah, personally, I think the incinerator was already there. I think this became a case of them chickening out, they or whoever was supposed to do it didn't do it, and then they just ran out of time. I mean, this is what baffles me about the whole case. We're talking about people that are quite frankly idiots, and now how is it taking this many months to be able to put this case together to be them chargeable? Because these are not people that pulled off a perfect crime. And this is the part that really baffles me, is it's so sloppy, yet there's apparently not enough to charge them yet. You know, I don't understand.
PI Steve Fisher claims he found a burn cage incinerator and a chainsaw inside the home rented for Burke by his manager. Employed by the property owner to determine what took place in his house, Fisher uncovered the items still in their original packaging and were unused. The incinerator is illegal in Los Angeles, delivered to the residents under a fake name, and claims to reach a temperature of 1,600 degrees.
We don't even know really when Celeste was last seen alive. We don't know how long she was dead for.
Police sources believe Celeste was killed back in the spring. Her body found in his Tesla trunk. She's dead, dismembered, turning into nothing but goo. At first we were told, oh, the grand jury is just conducting an investigation. Not true anymore. Listen.
A recent report said the grand jury hearing testimony about the death of Celeste Rivas was an investigative grand jury that helps gather evidence, but does not indict. Now, new information indicates Burke will face murder charges for the death of Celeste, and the grand jury hearing the case right now is going to be asked to hand down an indictment. An investigative grand jury can be useful to subpoena and then force uncooperative witnesses to testify. And sources now say the grand jury hearing witnesses is actually one that will vote on indictments. And these sources indicate prosecutor Beth Silverman, among others, believes Burke was involved in the death of Celeste.
So let me understand, to Dave Mack joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter. Dave, we were first told this grand jury was just an investigative grand jury that was gathering evidence on Celeste's death. Now we're learning an indictment looms, and it is a homicide indictment. I never had any doubt that this grand jury was going to seek charges. Do I have that right, Dave Mack? We're expecting a grand jury indictment to come down.
That's what everything is pointing towards, Nancy, right now, expecting an indictment to be handed down for homicide.
Danny Rubin, you have dealt with many, many grand jury indictments. I don't know if you're a former prosecutor, but were you a former prosecutor at any point, Danny?
No, defense attorney from the very beginning, but I've dealt with the aftermath.
Okay, I'm sorry to hear that. Long story short, if the grand jury is meeting to indict, not just investigate, that means they have to pick a charge, Rubin. They've got to go with, if it's homicide, murder one, murder two, voluntary or involuntary. And then, of course, there's felony murder. They've got to pick between those charges. They could indict in the alternative, which means a murder one with a murder two and a voluntary or even involuntary, all in the same indictment, so a jury can pick. So if they're going to go with murder one, go with me, Rubin, go with me. That means they either got the COD from the body, which was decomposed, and they know there was either a gunshot wound, a broken hyoid bone to suggest asphyxiation, something in toxicology, a knife nick to one of the bones. They've either got it from the body itself, or they've got a witness to say she was murdered and this is what happened. Because they got to indict on those few choices, murder one, murder two, voluntary, involuntary. That's all the choices there are for homicide. To do murder one or murder two, they had to find something from the body or a witness. What do you think?
I think if they had something from the body, they would have been bringing charges a lot sooner. It seems like if they're looking into indicting for homicide, whichever one they pick, they probably got some information from a witness that they questioned over the past month or two. I know that they're going to be calling back witnesses in February. That's what I've read. So it seems like they're still trying to find more evidence. But if they're looking to switch that investigation now, it's probably because of something someone said, possibly in conjunction with something they found on the body.
Dave Mack, speaking of witnesses before the grand jury, isn't it true that witnesses, at least one, has refused to come to the grand jury? Isn't that true?
Absolutely true, Nancy. And they've gone so far as to threaten to arrest her if she won't come in.
Danny Rubin, I'm just wondering, let's just put together the pieces here, Rubin. A witness stated that she refused to come to the grand jury. An order went out to either bring her in, have her arrested, give her immunity if she was facing charges herself, therefore she would have no reason to take the Fifth Amendment from the grand jury, or charge her with contempt. If you're a target, you can be given immunity and forced to testify, because you have no Fifth Amendment right to remain silent if you're not going to be charged. Or if you're just a witness, you can be held in contempt and jailed until you testified. Okay, so that word goes out, and the next thing you know, an indictment is being handed down. Sounds to me like they got the witness testified, and now we're looking at a homicide indictment.
That could be it. I mean, like I said before, it could be something in conjunction with what they found in the body. It could be some combination of testimonies. But this is why we have subpoena powers, because both the prosecution and defense, prosecution and grand jury, defense at trial and preliminary hearing, we need that to bring in witnesses who can testify. And many times we can't get what we need without those witnesses. So it's a very big stick that we have to bring witnesses in that we need.
Danny Rubin, you have a question for Steve Fisher?
Yeah. Steve, when you investigated the home where David was reportedly living, was there anything else of note that you found? Anything still in its wrapper? Anything that looked like it had not been taken out of its packaging?
No, besides those two items, you know, there was a couple full respirators, almost like gas masks at the house, but they were out of the package. Don't know exactly what they were for, but those were the two, you know, most damning things for sure. There was a lot of stuff left behind that was of value, such as the memory card with all the photos, but nothing that really was like, what would that be doing here?
Joe Scott Morgan joining me, professor of forensics, Jacksonville State University, star of Body Bags with Joe Scott Morgan. Joe Scott, we're learning a lot tonight. Okay, we knew that there was a chainsaw. We knew that there was a home incinerator. We didn't know that it had been purchased with gift cards anonymously and that it had been sent under a fake name. Now we know that purchase can be traced and we can find out, hopefully, if there's video, who bought the gift cards and where and when. What does this mean to you forensically? What can we prove with this new evidence?
Well, I think certainly with the gift cards in particular, because that is something that can be digitally traced. And just let me remind everybody, these gift cards can be picked up anywhere. It doesn't have to be at a big store. You can walk into a gas station and buy these things. So, but the upside with this is...
But they can be traced, Joe Scott, the location of where the gift card... They're like, they got numbers on them like guns, for Pete's sake. You can find where a gift card was purchased.
Yeah, and it gets very... And the digital evidence here gets very granular. And so it's going to be very specific. You can put a really tight pin in this thing. Also, you know, the initial purchase, the utility of these things, and then you track along with the purchases that are made. Now, I'm going to use a term here, and I'm sure you'll slap me down for saying this. I got to tell you, Nancy, from a legal standpoint, the things I've heard attorneys say in the past with these boxes of unopened items, when you think about the chainsaw and this burn box and these sorts of things, this almost smacks of like an inchoate offense. I don't know. I think I'd like to know your opinion of that, but there's planning going on, perhaps, if they can prove that, and maybe there is intent, but they just couldn't complete the act here. Going back to what Steve had said earlier, this seems like the, I don't know, old reference here, the apple dumpling gang. They just can't get anything right. They're just kind of falling on their faces. No one can pull the trigger. There's not a leader. It's just like they push this thing off in the ether, and maybe she'll just disappear. I don't know, because I got to tell you, out of all the cases I've covered, I've never seen anything, first off, take this long. You've got a lot of elements here of movement with the body, going to Karen's point of disrespecting the remains to this point. And then you have all these other elements where no one could finish the job.
Okay, you refer to inchoate from the Latin verb incohere, which means in its inception, in its beginning, just starting. So I see this, if any of this is borne out by the facts, and again, David Burke is presumed innocent until proven guilty, the beginning of the destruction of the body went because the burn cage and the chainsaw, and we do know she was dismembered, where you come in. They obviously did not use the chainsaw. Hey, Steve Fisher, was the chainsaw also still in the package?
It had the protective shield over the blade. It wasn't in an actual package, but had the protective shield over it.
Okay, so it had never been used, which suggests that it's new. And we keep talking about, hey, do you do your own landscaping? Maybe, obviously, he didn't do his own landscaping, but if he had a landscaper that was going to use that, I mean, that could be a defense, but it was never used, which suggests it also was just bought and will probably be traceable. That said, incohate. I see it as evidence of destruction of the body, tampering with a corpse, which is also a felony, which is a separate offense from the homicide itself. I think we're going to see a very involved and intricate indictment, which deals with the actual death of Celeste and disposing of her body. And you're right, Joe Scott, the attempt to get rid of her body was incohate. It had just started, and it's leaving a trail. The cover-up will likely be indicia proof of the crime itself. Wouldn't you agree with that? Maybe they just got tired of waiting to get all of the items, the burn cage, the chainsaw, and went, just put her in the trunk, man.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the case here. There's also one more issue to this, and this is rather gruesome. It's not that the rest of this hasn't been. It's just that who's going to draw the short straw here? Who's going to put this cage together, which, by the way, is very easy to assemble? Who's going to put the thing together? And then who's going to finish up the process of rendering down her body to the point where it's manageable to go in here? And also they think, oh my Lord, this is going to create a smell that no one is going to be able to escape.
A second person has been linked to the death of Celeste Rivas. Attorney Mark Garagos claims the suspect's phone and social media data was triangulated by LAPD homicide detectives to the spot on the same time frame Rivas died.
They've got a chart at LAPD that you would not believe. They've got this thing down to a timeline that's almost by the minutes triangulated to the location, if you can believe that. And it's not just one source. When I say triangulated, it's media, social media, cell phone, Tesla, all I'll say is other kind of GPS tracking devices.
You're seeing Harvey Levin's Two Angry Men podcast with Mark Garagos, veteran defense attorney. I mean, Melissa McCarty joining us, investigative journalist. All of the people that lived in that home or were in and out frequently can be identified. Fisher has video of the person moving the Tesla around the neighborhood. He knows who that is. He saw the face. He's not saying. So don't you know that what Garagos and Levin said is true? They've got it down to a timeline by the minute. You think any one of those D4VD cohorts is going to go anywhere without their phone or their Apple Watch or their nav system in their car? Oh, no. They travel as a pack, and they're all traveling together, Melissa.
Nancy, I think we're going to see more than one person charged in this case. And that's what's so great about the grand jury phase. To me, this comes across as a case where a lot of people aren't forthcoming. They don't want to talk. So you need subpoenas to force them to get on the stand so prosecutors can lock in their theories, lock in their timelines, take all of the digital forensic that they've been gathering since September, and really piece together what they believe to be true. So I think more than one person will be charged at the end of this grand jury.
What about it, Steve Fisher? Why won't you tell me who was driving that car? I said in a previous evening that I was misled. It was not misled by you. You're correct. The car was moved this day and that day to this location, that location. I was misled by our own analysis that she was killed. She died just before the car started moving. She could have been dead much before that. She was placed in the car before the car was moving. Now, back to my query. Why aren't you telling people who was moving the vehicle? I guess you testified to that in front of the grand jury.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
I'm not even sure what a grand jury is, but the reason that I didn't is because I don't want people, if I did say that, I don't want people to think that she was just killed like that. I believe that her death could go back as far as January. And, this person I'm certain will be held accountable, but I also don't want somebody to take it into their own hands, because this is moving super slow and it's frustrating. And I just think it's a safer, way to go.
You know why, Steve Fisher? Because I think Melissa McCarty is right. I think a lot of people are going to be charged, including possibly named as unindicted co-conspirators, in order to get their testimony, give them immunity to get them to testify. This, as money woes rear their ugly head?
EA Sports, the biggest name in sports video games, quietly removes Burke's song, What Are You Waiting For?, from Madden NFL 26. The legendary football game features a soundtrack when released in August 2025 that positions Burke's cut between BIA and Alex Warren on the playlist, but now the song has vanished from the list. No announcement explaining the reason behind the move.
Dave Mack, joining me, Crime Stories investigative reporter. Is that why we are hearing about boo-hoo money woes?
I think it's just the tip of the iceberg, Nancy. Remember, when all of this started, he was on his first worldwide tour. He was only 2 or 3 days into it when everything broke and it stopped. This was the end of the career. No money's been coming in since then, or at least it's not nearly what it was. So, yeah, money woes, absolutely.
So every time somebody played Madden NFL 26, it's a legendary football game, they would hear David Burke's song, What Are You Waiting For? It played every time somebody played the game. Is that right, Dave Mack?
Well, they created a playlist of songs, Nancy. So, yes, it was one of several, kind of like on an album. You know, you have several different artists on there.
Is that a yes? Could you just give me a yes, no, please?
Yes.
Okay, so yes. So every time that song is played, D4VD makes, let's just pretend, a dollar, a penny. That's a lot of money because that is a huge, huge game in sports video games. He's lost all that money. That's the tip of the iceberg. But I think he's got bigger fish to fry than losing money off Madden NFL 26. If you know or think you know anything about this case, no matter if you think it's insignificant, doesn't matter, please call Homicide, 213-486-6890. Repeat, 213-486-6890. And Steve Fisher, if you have to go back in front of the grand jury, which you are neither denying or confirming, I will make a cameo appearance as a defense attorney and come represent you because I want to be in that grand jury. Okay, Fisher? For free, pro bono. And tonight, we remember an American hero, Corporal Matthew Snook, Delaware Police, shot in the line of duty, leaving behind wife turned widow and a daughter without her dad. American hero, Corporal Matthew Snook. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend.